I'm Are You Serious? And this is my show.
Disasters, and
eventually the end of the world. Are you serious? All right, welcome to the Are You Serious Show Weekend Edition. We're here with Jeff Deal, Diana Brown, and our special guest co-host James Ketchum, the author of Chemical Warfare, Secrets Almost Forgotten. And we're going to impart our wisdom upon you all in various topics. But let's start off with a bit of Socratic dialogue, back the old philosophical dialogue idea. And I was reading a piece a few days ago by sort of an old hippie environmentalist type who started talking about the importance of being humble. And I thought, isn't it a little too late for that? And most philosophies and religions and mythologies in human civilization have warned against hubris. And my question is, should we try to be humble, or should we say, fuck that shit, to paraphrase Nietzsche, Crowley, and Rumsfeld?
What do you mean by humble?
That's a good question. That's a Socratic question.
Excellent, Mr. Deal. Deal is so on it today, man. All right.
Humbleness a fraud? I mean, we're supposed to, it's something that is expected of people that they don't think too highly of themselves, perhaps, or that
don't
they,
be getting too far
they
above
don't
yourself.
Think that
my relatives would say
not better than other people.
Well, you did invite a psychiatrist, even though I wrote a book on chemical warfare. I guess I'll have to switch gears here.
Analyze this.
Well, of course, we all know the history of the term hubris, so I won't go into that. But it occurs to me that hubris might be, well, you asked about humility first, but hubris might be a case of failing to do something that you're able to do, but when you don't, someone labels you as having hubris.
That your reach exceeded your grasp, or is it the other way around?
Yeah, if your grasp can be extended a little further, maybe you're considered a hero instead of someone with too much pride.
And if you're somebody, that's the same thing as humble too, isn't it?
Well, yeah,
you shouldn't try to exceed your grasp.
Right. If you're too humble, you could be seen as being, lack of motivation, or not being passionate, or something.
I think you can talk yourself into being humble. I do it every day. And one way is not to predict the future for yourself, but to let it come, and that makes you a little more passive and willing to take things as they arise. And I've been practicing that lately with a fair amount of success, actually. I don't know about others.
Is the idea of being humble something that you think that people who have, say, more power or more aggressive types use to control people who are more passive or have... I mean, there's a... Christians were told to be humble, but mostly they were poor, and perhaps they were being
fed to lions.
They were being dominated by
and a pride of lions, which is interesting enough. But I digress. Okay, well, so here's a question I'll ask you, being an expert on the mind. What is the nature of us human beings? We love to build someone up and then knock them off that pedestal. So we like people to be our stars and our athletes. We want them to be elevated and something, I guess, we look up to. And then we can't wait till the first scandal comes along and we can knock them off that pedestal. Is that just human nature, something we're never going to outgrow?
I don't think it relates to hubris so much as maybe the universal desire to see other people not surpass us in some way or not be too perfect.
In this case, we don't want to be humble. We don't want to be humbled.
No one really wants to be humbled.
Well, maybe we like to see in the abstract, we like to see other individuals achieve great things, but then at some point we want to feel like we're as good as those people and not, less than them. So when they fail, we also
feel comforted that
we're comforted at that as well.
Well, it seems to me that every novel, for example, has a progression where the individual starts out at a certain level and then invariably has problems and falls from that level. And then, of course, the denouement is whether he succeeds in coming back up, which makes it into a comedy, or whether he doesn't and becomes a tragedy.
Hmm. The hero's
journey. Then it becomes like a Joseph Campbell kind of archetypal story or something.
Exactly.
The hero's journey.
Yes. The hero should be sort of hubristic, right? I mean, the hero is reaching beyond, but doesn't want to be. It's kind of like a.
Exactly.
I think the reader likes to see the hero set himself up for a problem and then see what happens. That creates the tension.
Mm-hmm. Now, do people who achieve a lot or get a lot of fame, they become excessively hubristic? I mean, Paul McCartney flies into Japan with like 5 pounds of marijuana on the top, on top of his suitcase, you know, on top of all his other clothes. It's like nobody's going to bother me, even though I've been busted 4 times before.
The rock star mentality. Well, you know.
That the rules don't apply to him.
Right.
The old statement about power corrupting and absolute power corrupting absolutely. I don't know if that's inevitable, but certainly occurs often enough to be commonplace.
You could also see it as a matter of balance, right? Like, if my personality is a certain way in one direction, then it's probably a good idea to think of ways to offset that, because if you go too far in any one direction, it turns into like a neurosis or something that becomes a personality problem. Like, so if I'm really famous and I'm getting all of this feedback from society that I'm somewhere up near the top, then right. Mentally it would do well probably to try to balance that out by deliberately being humble. Whereas if I'm the opposite, if I've always had a really low station by society standards, probably do well to find ways to boost myself.
I don't know if that's possible, because when you're a rock star, you're getting all this energy coming in, and it just builds and builds. It's, I think, inevitable that you're going to...
I think they stop getting off on the attention after a while. I think that's why rock stars do cocaine. Because attention and success really jogs the same neurochemicals that cocaine does. Right. And then after a while, it's like, the thrill is gone.
There aren't enough people. There's not enough throng.
Once they realize how stupid all these people that love them are, they no longer respect this energy that they're getting, and then they have to get it somewhere else.
I guess that is part of it. I'm sorry, please.
No, go ahead.
Well, I guess that, you know, after a while, the stars do start to look at their fans as just this stupid.
Especially if you're a big musician, right, where you go and you play like the same 12 songs at every concert, and you're playing the same song over and over and over, but everybody in the audience is acting like they've never heard it before, and they're just freaking. It's so predictable, you know? You're like, you know exactly what these idiots
are
going to
do. Yeah, same old
song
and dance.
And musicians always say that, you know, if they do crap or they do great, nobody will notice the difference.
I was listening to an interview with Chris Rock the other day, and he was talking about how. And I love Chris Rock. I'll just flat out say that. I think he's great.
I've grown to love him. I mean, he has gotten so much
he's
funnier.
So good.
He's like, he was good before, but he's brilliant.
He really is. And he was going on to say that whenever he goes up, whether it's a small club working out new material or an enormous club or a movie or whatever he's doing, he feels like he has to bring it 1,000%. And if he doesn't bring it 1,000%, then he can't say, oh, it's the audience, they were off, or the material. He's humble. In that he knows he has to bring it 100%, and he believes 1,000%, and he believes he has the ability to do it. But anything less than 1,000 is not enough. So yeah, he has this sort of built-in checkpoint.
So I mean, aside from celebrity, I mean themes of hubris probably in our culture come from politics, perhaps American foreign policy, which maybe we'll talk about a little bit, is perceived by many as being hubristic. But then also, I'm probably the biggest one of all, which we talk about a lot here, is technology. And, you know, the idea that we can remake the human species and seed the universe with intelligence. And now that's about as hubristic as it gets. People who are into that love to quote the great, you know, philosophers of hubris, in a sense, like Nietzsche and so forth.
Yes.
Don't get into the slave mentality. Don't, you know, don't be victimized by nature. Just get right out there and slug it out and, you know, go
and
for it.
And win.
So is that a good idea? Maybe we should be hubristic.
Don't you think the desire to achieve is sort of built in to the human organism as a survival mechanism?
If you had,
the brain itself is active whether you stimulate it or not, which is an interesting point I picked up in the lab. Not by discovering it, but by hearing about it. So, really,
people in isolation have activity, but it's a weird kind of activity. It's a different kind of activity, isn't it?
What kind is it?
Well, I mean, like John Lilly talked about going into isolation.
Oh, right.
People have
the sensory deprivation.
Yeah,
especially with LSD on board. Well, of course, when
I didn't mean to derail your
Well, you're getting into my subject matter now. Yeah, he did some wild stuff, and people either like that. Actually, sensory deprivation is a form of hyperstimulation because it allows your thoughts to run wild, and you have very little frame of reference. And that's what LSD also produces.
But I think the other point you were making is that this is just natural to human beings to grasp and try to achieve.
That's interesting because, I mean, if there's something that's occurring naturally and you don't have to put any effort into really making that happen because it's natural, and yet it has this strong effect on your behavior, maybe you should be adjusting against it once again. Like maybe what you need to focus on are the things that don't come naturally to you, but you might need them just as much in order to maybe stay balanced or just to do certain things.
Well, what do you do about when you're dreaming? You don't seem to have any control there, but that's been described as a method of shuffling your thoughts and setting yourself up for something better the next day, kind of figuring out problems in your sleep. Mm-hmm. I don't believe there's much freedom of choice in that matter, and it's apparently a very important survival mechanism to consolidate what you learn during the day.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe having the invention of sort of collective culture came about with people fighting against their hubris and trying to be more humble so that they could live in a society.
The good of the many.
Good of the many.
And then they're the ones that you might say overcompensate in the opposite direction. A reaction formation is what it's called technically in psychiatry, where let's say an individual who really wants to be admired chooses instead to flagellate himself and live a very ascetic life, getting some pleasure perhaps from...
And that becomes a whole other form of hubris, you know, the religious fanatics and purists of all sorts who believe in
self-righteous,
being humble.
Self-denial.
Tend to actually be very hubristic in terms of wanting to dictate what people...
Exactly. I'm more humbler than you are.
I'm really proud. I'm really proud at my humility.
Or as they said in the 70s, I really lost my ego. You didn't lose your ego. I've totally lost my ego. Anyway, I'm moving on to talk about the other people's egos. Everybody is talking about how the 2008 presidential campaign is off to such an early start, and now they've front-loaded the primaries, which most of the analysts say is to the advantage of those with the most bucks. But to me, it really just sort of brings out how the presidential campaigns aren't about politics. Yeah. It's like if I'm sitting down, and aside from any, like, you know, left-wing or anarchist or heavy political radical kind of diatribe or analysis, I'm just like the way it affects me personally. It's like if I'm like watching TV, it's like if I'm watching Frontline or something.
Right.
I mean, there's something very serious about that, and my brain is really involved. If I'm reading a paper or a magazine and there's a serious political issue being discussed, I feel like, you know, certain parts of my brain are being activated in a certain way. And like, I enjoy the campaigns, but it's hitting the same spots as Entertainment Tonight. And just having it start so early really brought that home to me.
And now I remember getting your email.
There we go. We've done a brain test.
Political drama as opposed to real politics.
Personality contest.
Right? Yeah, image and the like. Well, we brought it on ourselves with having such image capturing capabilities as video.
Right.
And I think everyone likes to be admired, and if you could be admired in color and high resolution TV, that's even better.
But this seems to have started back in like 1968. They talked about the selling of a president, and then I remember in like 1970, 1971, there was a very powerful political movement which died suddenly. And it was, you know, the New Left, really kind of a combination of the New Left and counterculture, you know, whatever any of us might think of it. It just suddenly like disappeared. And I always kind of wondered about that. But then I kind of forgot about the other story, which was that there was an election, a presidential election coming up. And so here came along George McGovern, and all this energy went into the presidential election, and what died?
Well, there's also a war that was preoccupying a lot of people and creating a lot of anger. And I think that took precedence over some of the New Left and hippie ideas that were flourishing in the mid-60s.
Well, that was the people were reacting to it in the early 70s, and then they kind of went off into the... So, I mean, could there be a conspiracy theory here? I mean, are they starting this early because people are in a real bad mood and they want to distract us from real problems with the economy?
Well, but it's across the different parties. I mean, it's Republicans and Democrats.
So then they would all be having to get together, you know, in a secret cabal. I'm just bringing it up.
Well, I think the conspiracy is that, you know, in order to run a presidential campaign, you got to have all this money. Mm-hmm. And what that means is TV presence. You're buying television presence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all tied in with the corporate machine. It's just about, it's about making money. It's about saying, look at me, I'm a sellable product. Invest in me.
So we're going to put you out there
and
as much as we can.
It's the same thing. Yeah, it's the same thing. Okay, on an individual candidate level, and then also on a state, the party level, and then you've got their interest in the media. I mean, all of these media outlets, the news media, are going to benefit from increased viewership. So they're all for.
Therefore, increased advertising.
Yeah, bring it on sooner. Bored of the campaigns and stop watching. I mean, do people really enjoy that stuff so much?
Look at the theater
of it. They seem to. It is. Yeah, it's the theater. It's our new gladiators.
And they're still going to be talking more about Anna Nicole Smith. On the cable TV channel.
It's the same thing, like you said, though, are you? I mean,
you're right, though.
I'm voting for her.
Well,
let me make that clear.
Even though she's dead, I think she should still run.
I think so, too.
Just vote for her.
Well, you know, I was reading that, like, most people...
She's more attractive than the other candidates, except John Edwards.
Well, you know, the whole HDTV thing is going to bring
cute.
Up... He's dreamy. Arya's got a twinkle in his eye right now.
I have to admit, I have a little,
it's
little
sweet.
Thing for
it's
kind of
cute.
Edwards.
You should... John, if we could get him to come in... I mean, you're blushing now.
I would definitely have him on the show. I have.
That's so sweet. Arya's kind of blushing right now. So here's the question. How will we look in HD? I mean, high definition is changing. You know, stars.
I think Hillary is in bad shape in HD. She just does.
You can see all the pores.
Yeah, and none of the Republican guys look very good.
Are you saying
either.
That skin looks like the surface of the moon?
I think Obama and
he's
Edwards,
very photogenic.
They look good.
Good complexion.
They don't have to wear makeup. That's the thing is, the ironic thing is with the high def is that you can see everybody's makeup.
Right.
And that they're trying so hard to look good, which works on normal TV because you don't see the marks and the edges
exactly.
and stuff. But on high def, you could see they look like, when you see them live, and they're all like dolled up and it looks...
Very
absurd.
Odd.
Yeah.
Well, they're developing an airbrush technique to accommodate that.
Yeah. Right.
Well, the strategy of timing has to be put into the mix here. It's kind of like a boxing match where one boxer thinks if he just lays low and then brings his big ammunition out later in the fight, he's
rope-a-dope.
Rope-a-dope.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And,
I think Gingrich is doing that.
Many people are speculating that Hillary's doing that right now.
Yeah.
Waiting for the dust to settle before she makes her major drive.
She's in the lead, though. She's raised the most money and is kind of pretty visible. I don't know.
Quietly raising the money.
I guess.
I don't think she wants to lead by too much because then she'd be a target.
Knocked back down.
She'd be like the superstar that you're waiting to see stumble.
Right. But I've seen that. I've heard people talking the same thing about... Obama, that he's really not very visible at all.
Because he doesn't say much.
Yeah, everyone's waiting for him to stumble.
Once he starts having to say stuff, He's been accused. See, we're drawing right into it because
we're talking about it.
It's sports.
Exactly. It is like sports.
No, we've lost the meta aspect, and now we're in it. We're down the rabbit hole.
We're down in. We got sucked in. Anybody like anybody? Let's before we call an end to this show, does anybody have a candidate that they actually like?
Are you serious?
We'll start with Jeff. I know Jeff never votes.
On principle, I think voting is a cynical act, but... I love the whole thing. I think it's going to be a hilarious season.
The worse, the better.
There's
going to
be so many spectacles, and it's going to be highly amusing, and it's going to make good TV. So.
All right. Well, Dr. Ketchum, any candidates that you like?
I don't know. We have one woman in power now. I guess we can stand to have two, and maybe it'll turn out to be a matriarchy in the end anyway, because women often do quite well in running countries and keeping them out of trouble. Germany's another example, and Israel had Golda Meir. And
so Hillary Clinton seems to be a decent possibility there. And Diana Brown, any...
Well, you know, I'm really waiting...
attracted to...
Not quite as much as you are with your little blush over there. I'm waiting for the swag. You know, really, it's going to be about who's going to buy my vote. I mean, I want good stickers, T-shirts, bumper stickers, and... No, really, I'm being incredibly glib, but... I'm torn between Mr. Obama and Ms. Clinton. I mean, it would be fabulous to have a female president, or would it? We don't know. It's not really about her gender. It's the job she's going to do when she gets in there, and whoever's in there is going to be inheriting quite a bit of chaos. So it's a toss-up right now. I'm waiting for the swag.
I have a Madam Mao vibe from Hillary Clinton. and not in a good way, like the way I used to think in the 60s when I was brainwashed by the left or anything. You know, I have a really heavy authoritarian vibe from Ms. Clinton. Of all the real candidates, I think, you know, I mean, it might be a good vibe for America to have an African-American president. Now, there's one candidate who nobody ever mentions in any of the news, but he has announced. His name is Ron Paul. He's a libertarian Republican from Texas. And if I could actually elect somebody president, particularly given the fact that he would be balanced out by a Democratic Congress, Mr. Paul is my guy. But he will not... ever even get mentioned other than on the Reason Magazine website.
Love's the only weapon. Shit!
Are you serious?